You are listening to The Straight Shooters exclusively on Wildfire Radio. Subscribe to The Straight Shooters podcast on iTunes by visiting the iTunes store and download every episode on wildfireradio.com. Now, here's Vaughn Johnson and Nick Picone bringing you the latest and greatest in the world of professional wrestling.
Oh, Shooters Radio Universe!
My name, of course, is Vaughn Johnson of Philly.com.
Well, super nerdy pet peeve of mine, nitpicky. I don't think he should have been hopping over the top rope like a parkour champion.
You got me mad now.
What is your name?
As always, with my main man, Pots and Pans, Nick Picone.
That's me.
It doesn't matter what your name is.
I don't really know us like you think that you do.
I'm Ryan Isley.
What is he doing?
My God! Is he the third man?
He's the third man!
What the hell is going on here?
Straight Shooters is, the number one show on Wildfire Radio.
I'm feeling good.
No sleep, no food, no nothing. Just maniacism.
Well, the skeptics and all the people have a little bit of... Let me do this again.
Oh, it's live, Hal.
Sorry.
What actually happened on the show? Nothing.
Give me a hell yeah! I said give me a hell yeah!
Hey, everybody out there in internet land, as I like to call it. You are watching and listening to episode 115. Damn, we got 115 of these in the can. Or this is the 115th one, I should say. 115 of the Straight Shooters on, let's see, YouTube, live on YouTube, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio. Did I miss anything, Nick?
No.
Wi-Fi Radio as well. Wi-Fi Radio. Shout out to the boys of Wi-Fi Radio.
It goes without saying, right?
Yeah. But I'm, of course, your host, Vaughn Johnson of Philly.com, joined by my main man, Pots and Pans, and Nick Picone of Philly Voice and Philly Influence. And Nick,
what's going on?
How are you on this fine afternoon here in Philadelphia? I'm looking behind me. I'm looking. The sun is setting. It's nice outside, though.
It is. I have a window over there. It's pretty awesome.
Nice.
Dealing with some sinus issues right now, so.
Oh, no.
Not a great Wednesday for me.
Oh, no. And we are not joined by... It is going to be a great show, because we have... A special guest. We're not our third man, Brian Isley, is not here today. That's okay. You can say we upgraded a little bit. Brian's not going to be happy to hear that. But we have managing editor of Fightful.com, Sean Ross Sapp, joining us on the show today. Sean, how are you on this fine afternoon?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. Excited to talk about Hell in a Cell, maybe more than I will be by the time it's over this Sunday. So,
before we dig into Hell in a Cell, inform our audience who are possibly unfamiliar what you do over at Fightful and what you have to offer over there at Fightful.
Yeah, we're a cross combat sports website. We cover pro wrestling, MMA, boxing, and really anything that's relevant in that realm. If something kickboxing or amateur wrestling needs covered, we do that too. We cover both the serious side and the lighter side. We have analysis from people like Chris Harrington, David Bixenspan, Brandon Howard. We've broken a lot of stories. Some of you all may have found your way to Fightful. We broke the Ronda Rousey training to be a pro wrestler story. We have photos, videos, forums, podcasts, a little bit of everything at Fightful.com. And if there's anything there that we don't have that you all want, just pop over the forums and tell us and we'll get it.
There you go. Check it out, Fightful.com. You're at Sean Ross Sapp on Twitter, right? Just make sure I got that down correctly. Some people have some weird handles out there. I didn't want to say the wrong one. But I'm
like
at Vaughn Johnson.
Johnson.
Yeah, that will screw that guy. He's not. That's not the real Vaughn Johnson. He's an imposter. Nah. All right.
He is.
He's the reason why I got to be at Vaughn M Johnson. So I'm still. I'm still on your ass, Vaughn Johnson. Don't. I ain't forget about you. All right. You're an imposter. I want my handle back.
When registering Fightful last year, there was a person with Fightful, and they tweeted one time years ago. I was so upset.
Yeah. The person who is at Vaughn Johnson tweeted – last time he tweeted is like 2012. So screw that guy. And,
I do that.
At Vaughn M. Johnson.
I knew that would bother
you. Because it does.
I just looked him up. I just looked him up. He started a tweet again last year. Or no, two years ago.
He started a tweet again 2 years ago. He's back in the game. All right. So I guess we're going to start off we're going to start off with Raw and SmackDown a little bit first because we got some stuff, some interesting stuff to happen on those two shows. Nick, I know you wanted to discuss something that specifically happened on Raw with this whole Sister Abigail stuff. Because really, what else are we going to talk about with Raw? I mean, we don't have to dig in because we got a lot of Hell in a Cell stuff to talk about. But I definitely wanted to get your thoughts. Because I saw the report from Ryan Satin. I did not read it because I didn't necessarily want to be spoiled. But I wanted to know your theory about, and Sean, you can weigh in as well, about what this Sister Abigail stuff could mean, what it could be, the whole thing.
Well, Nick, my whole thing, so you definitely didn't read it. So I don't want to spoil anything.
I didn't read what Ryan Satin reported. But okay. If you want to spoil it, let me know. I want to know your thoughts. So just lay it all out there.
I think, so I haven't really put much thought into it because Bray Wyatt has just been so kind of off my radar for the longest time now, even coming back and feuding with Finn Balor never really kind of hit me as something that was great or even very good. So what Ryan Satin had reported, I think that's a good way to get me interested in Bray Wyatt again. I'll just say that because it's definitely something different that we've, we haven't seen it, and it could possibly work its way into future storylines in actually making Bray Wyatt a more rounded figure, I guess. Like his character, in my view, might benefit from it in a way. So that's kind of all the main reason why I'm like, you know what? He kind of needs a spark, and that would definitely provide a spark for him.
He needs a spark. In a lot of different ways, more than ways than one, for sure. But
and this way would provide that.
So wait a minute, what was the way that you said that? Because I'm not sure. Did you spoil it at all, or?
No, I don't want to for you. So
look, feel free. I'd rather hear from you right now.
Okay. All right.
I'll give you what I think is if I think it's cool or not.
You put it like that, and based off the promo, Ryan Satin had reported that Bray Wyatt is Sister Abigail. So they were.
And that's something people were kind of throwing out their theories on social media Monday night, was that his alter ego would be Sister Abigail.
Yeah.
Which is...
I honestly hadn't thought about it before Monday night, so it's something that I don't think many have thought about. When we would talk about Sister Abigail, I don't remember a lot of people coming up and saying, oh, Bray Wyatt is Sister Abigail. It was something different for me to think of, and I think because me especially have been so down on Bray Wyatt for a while now, that's just something to kind of be like, whoa, like something maybe not the most interesting thing you can do with him, but at this point, he's just kind of there, and it's something for him to do. I don't know.
Sean, what do you think about this whole Sister Abigail fiasco?
It's an opportunity, but the situation is like they're running into right now. Like the plan was for Finn Balor to face Brock Lesnar. So you can't have him lose to Bray Wyatt and then face Brock Lesnar. Well, they could. They do that all the time. But then if you're rebooting the Bray Wyatt character and you're adding this dimension to him, he's got to win. Otherwise, like, why do it? Why extend this feud? Right. Why keep this going? And why reboot this here? Why not have him move on to somebody else and say that this is the measure that he has to take? So I'm very interested in who he'll actually end up on the winning side of this feud if that's the direction they go.
Because like you said, why bring out Sister Abigail if you're just going to have it get beat? It's like Bray Wyatt, what can Bray Wyatt do to get a win? He can't even, take on the soul of his dead sister and win. It's evil dead sister can transform his face and make it look like the ring and stuff like that. But I know the interesting thing we saw Monday night was that Sage Beckett tweeted out this thing, they're all lies, darling, and had everybody thinking, oh, maybe she's Sister Abigail, which I wouldn't be against. I mean, I wouldn't mind if Sister Abigail is a physical person. To me, I don't know, the whole alter ego thing, I don't know. It's... I don't know what it does for Bray Wyatt besides just give him something else something to change his face with. I mean, I think he works better when he's got people around him. The Wyatt family was always good, especially when there was Luke Harper and Eric Rowan. Even Braun Strowman to a certain extent, but and I thought it worked well with Randy Orton as well. But he's always, to me, he's always better when he's got somebody to play off of. And if you want to give him a physical person, why not give him a Sister Abigail and make it a woman and have that interplay? It's definitely a different wrinkle for Bray Wyatt other than, you know, what he's been doing for the last... Damn, how long has he been on his own since he's got to Raw?
The unfortunate part of the Wyatt family is that those three just couldn't stay healthy at the same time. It was always Harper, Rowan, or Wyatt. One of those three got hurt all the time, and they just couldn't make it work where it was all three of them. Eventually, that kind of helped facilitate their desire to bring in Braun Strowman because that kept happening. And fortunately, we got that because that's some good TV.
Right.
I think he does need somebody to play off of, and the fact that he has, you want to say, mental control maybe over these guys, you're able to run that back. You're able to say that they can't shake him, and we see what the company generally does with these guys when they aren't with him, which is a whole lot of nothing. Like, Rowan and Harper can't get on TV right now, so why not utilize that? I liked Bray Wyatt a lot more as the backwoods, like, deliverance guy than I did the AV minor at college who's, like, really good at doing graphics and stuff, I guess, is his gimmick now. Like, he can Photoshop stuff.
Yeah, I've always said that, and I've said this 100 times, I've always liked Bray's character more based in reality, not a wizard who has superpowers somehow, but instead a guy who's just a psychopath. That, to me, that's more scary than a wizard who can shoot lightning out of his hands, because that's not even realistic. To me, he's more dangerous if he's more based in reality, because there are people out like that out there who are psycho, you know, who are, I don't know what the proper clinical term is to say what it is. You can say schizophrenic, or, you know, I don't want to offend any psychopaths out there, but you don't want to offend anybody
nowadays.
Certainly
not.
Right. But to me, that's a more of a threatening and more of a, ooh, like, unnerving character than the guy who's can teleport anywhere he wants, who can throw holograms up in a Hell in a Cell match somehow, and all that weird stuff he's been doing for the last, what, 3 years?
The supernatural characters are really hard one to portray this day and age, because, I mean, it's just hard to pull off these days. And he, as almost like as a horror movie character, which is what it kind of was in the beginning, it's like you make a wrong turn in the woods, you're going to run into these guys and you don't know what they're going to do to you. That's about as close as you can get. And I think they kind of jumped the shark with him. And now they're just taking the shark and beating it over the head with a shovel. So
yeah, they definitely did.
That's what I think. You made a good point about having the Wyatt family around him. And is this the beginning of them doing that again? You know, I don't know. Do you think they would put the Wyatt family together again after they've,
I hope so.
They've already split them twice. So,
that's true. Know,
maybe third time.
Not once. Not once, but twice.
I remember being excited when they put them back together after the first split. And that was even worse than the original. So, just in terms of they were boring.
Yeah. Well, I'm just looking at a story right now of Roman Reigns being rated higher than in 2K18 than like Brock Lesnar and The Rock. He's like a 95 from Brock Lesnar and The Rock. Apparently under 95 in 2K18.
Did you see where so many guys were upset that Sami Zayn had a higher rating than them the year before?
No, I did not see that. That's funny.
Yeah, like a lot of people were like, Sami Zayn had a higher rating than me.
Well, if you go by WWE television,
yeah,
they probably got a real gripe there. Because if you go by WWE TV, Sami Zayn's a good 76.
Yeah.
A solid 75, maybe. So, yeah, anything else from Raw before we move on to Hell in a Cell and everything that comes with that? But nothing else. I barely remember Raw by this point. It's only 2 days ago.
How do you feel about the end where they kind of did this? It wasn't a reunion of sorts, but it was a silent, you know, with Reigns and Ambrose coming in and then Rollins coming in and then parting. I thought that was, in the middle of it, I was just like, wow, this is kind of lame. But afterwards, I was just kind of like, you know what? They could have done a lot worse because we've seen them do a lot worse. So, I mean, I think it's pretty – I think they know that we know it's Shield is going to reunite. But, you know, we haven't had that crowd pop yet for it, you know, like live in the ring. So, you know, for me, that was almost like, hey, next week this is going to happen inside the ring, so you better be ready. So that's kind of what I got out of it. And I thought it was – I mean, it wasn't terrible, but it wasn't, you know – Did I was wondering if you guys felt like if it took away from that, you know, in ring type of moment.
No, I don't mind it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with teasing things and leaving people wanting to see more. I'm all for the slow burn type of stuff. I just find it funny. And I said this on Monday, like that how baby faces never help each other at all in WWE, and they just let the
heels are the jerks,
right?
Yeah, exactly. That's so weird.
Babyfaces just let everybody get their asses whooped, but, you know, but it's supposed to be the good guys. It's like, to me, it would add more heat if babyfaces kind of help other babyfaces. Like, so when they run down to the ring and the heels bail, to me, that's good heat when the heels kind of bail out and look like cowards. But WWE, they got to pose for those video recaps and those video montages they play before the pay-per-view matches. That's what they're doing it for. That's the only reason why it happens. Yeah. You know you're going to see that three-man, The Miz, Sheamus and Cesaro pose. You know you're going to see that on a video package at some pay-per-view, Survivor Series, TLC, whatever. Whatever they do, the three-man match, six-man match, I would assume it would be TLC because that's where the Shield debuted, what was it, now, 5 years ago? Holy hell. So,
yeah.
You know, that's going to be one of the images on that video package. That's the only reason why they do it.
If you've ever seen NXT tape live, then you see how painfully long these guys have to stand in the ring after they win a match, especially takeovers. Because on takeovers, they do the replay highlights immediately following as someone raises their hand, and they're just standing there in the ring in the same spot facing the hard camera for the, like, 90 seconds to 2 minutes until they come back and they got to pose again.
Right. Really they do awesome. On main roster shows, too, where they just stand there and wait. Or they're on top of the ramp, and they got to stand there and wait.
Yeah.
And then the camera guy's like, all right, now go. Hold the belt up. And they do the whole pose. But, I've been down for a Shield reunion since they broke up, pretty much 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I still contend that they should have never broke up. They had a unique act there with three guys, three babyface act, a babyface trio that could be a legit top act. That doesn't happen too often. Mm-hmm. Usually WWE pushes one guy. They had a chance to have a trio act as a main event act. They could put on a marquee, the Shield, and people would buy tickets to see. They were just hitting that stride. And then they said, no more of that, because we need one guy.
And they weren't even faced for a long time. It was only a few months. Like, they never – like, and they blew off, what, a Wyatt feud and an Evolution feud pretty quickly. So maybe – I mean, that's probably why they made Seth turn so quickly. But, man, they could have definitely gotten a lot of mileage out of that. And
the authority storyline we got out of that was really just not fun.
Not at all. But so yeah, Shield reunion. I'm all for it. Sean, I would assume you're for it as well. It's time. To me, it's just time.
Sure. I don't know how long it'll last. I know they want to go to the Reigns Lesnar thing, but the way to make this a little more interesting to me is to put the titles on the line, like the tag team titles and the Intercontinental title. Because otherwise, like, and I still don't think they'll lose. But I'm like, why? Why, how do we think, like, how is there any concern that the Shield would lose to these guys, like, at all?
Right. Well, I think that's the case anyway. If you put the Shield back together, who are they going to lose to? Like, they're three of the top guys in the company, and they'll be together.
Braun or Samoa Joe and Authors of Pain, somebody they want to bring in and make into somebody, there wouldn't be anybody.
All right, well, that's Raw. I'm done talking about it because there's really nothing else to speak on with that. Hell in a Cell. We got Hell in a Cell this weekend. I've got the matches up on my computer screen here. I figured we'd probably get the matches out of the way first, to predict the matches out of the way, and then we'll talk about the past 20 years of Hell in a Cell. Because, like I said, man, it's been 20 years tomorrow since the very first Hell in a Cell match back at Bad Blood. Right? That was Bad Blood, 1997?
Bad Blood with two Ds.
Two Ds, yep.
So you know it's bad.
Yeah. Extra D, negative blood, if that's the type of blood. right off the top, let's go top to bottom here.
Wes.
Main event, which is, I'm almost certain would be the main event. I don't see why it wouldn't be.
Gotta be.
Almost count anywhere Hell in a Cell match, which is, okay. A little interesting there. That'd be false count anywhere. But they're going to leave the cage anyway, I would assume. So that's almost a given with Hell in a Cell matches nowadays. But Shane McMahon versus Kevin Owens. Sean, first up, who you got?
I think there's a good chance that Kevin Owens is the one that gets thrown off the top of the cage this time. Like, when have they ever promoted and straight up said someone's getting thrown off the cage? Like, that, I never hear that. So I think
never. It
might be possible. This cage is a lot bigger than the one that, like, Mick Foley fell off of, too. It's, like, 3 or 4 feet higher.
At least.
Yeah.
They intentionally did it, made it that high so people wouldn't jump off.
Yeah.
Like, that was a deterrent.
So I think that Kevin Owens is going to win. I mean, they see something in him. If Vince McMahon is in there taking bumps for somebody, then they see a lot of it. And that's another thing. This may be the last guy to ever be physically put over by Vince McMahon. I thought it was going to be Reigns the last time it happened. I thought it was going to be CM Punk the time before that. But he keeps getting in there and getting headbutted and hit with kendo sticks and stuff.
Yeah, Vince is, what is he, 72 now?
Yeah, he's up there, man.
At 72 going on 52, maybe? I don't know. That's the way it seems.
Really aged the last for that Owens thing. Like, he came out there, and I was like, yeah, he looks every bit of that 72 now.
Yeah, he does, but he don't think that. In his mind, he's the genetic jackhammer. As he says, well, he once said back in the day, and he's still disgusting to think about to this day. But Nick, Shane versus Kevin Owens.
I think I agree with Sean here. I'm going Kevin Owens because I don't see how, you know, putting him in that high profile match against Shane and Shane winning helps anyone. That, you know, like, Shane's not a wrestler. He's not going to main event pay per views down the line. This is to build Kevin Owens to a legitimate superstar where I'm not going to put him in the same category as Roman Reigns yet, but man, he's close because even though he's a heel, man, he can headline shows. He can get the crowd to buy tickets to see him get beat up, which is in 2017. It's not as easy as it was back in the 80s, 90s as a heel, especially today with social media. And how people love how he utilizes social media. So, you know, this is his coming out party. Like, he's already came out. He's already a huge star. But this is where Kevin Owens is made. You know, when that thing with Vince happened in the ring, I was legitimately like, whoa. Like, doesn't take – nowadays that doesn't happen very easily for me based on what I see on TV. But after that, it was clear as day to me. Kevin Owens is the man on SmackDown, and this is going to be a signature win. It's going to be even bigger than his Universal title win.
Funny, you don't really hear people complaining about Kevin Owens facing a Shane McMahon like the way people complain about AJ Styles facing Shane McMahon.
Right.
And that's because the story is so good, and it's been built so well. I mean, I don't really see any flaws. WWE's. I can nitpick WWE all day because they're worthy of nitpicking and negative feedback. I can't really knock them too much on this one. They've done it so well, so people have no room to complain because this has been so good. And I agree as far as Kevin Owens being a top guy. This version of Kevin Owens is certainly a top guy when he's this psychopathic, you know, essentially super heel where he doesn't really like anybody. Well, except Aiden English. He likes Aiden English because all the heels like Aiden English, right? I like Aiden English. But Kevin Owens has to win, right? But as far as who goes off the top of the cell, I guess somebody's got to go off the top of the cell because they've been talking about it.
Maybe
and
both.
It would be kind of silly if they did. Maybe both of them. Yeah. That'd be interesting. Because if whoever goes off, they got to lose. They can't win after that. So
yeah.
They got to get taken out in a coffin pretty much. So
maybe Shane's more than willing to do that. We've seen that time and time again.
Yeah. So maybe they both go off and Kevin like just barely drapes his arm over Shane because falls count anywhere. So he just drapes his arm over Shane and gets the three count and they destroy each other. But next match we're going to talk about here, sub match, which I'm so looking forward to. Another great feud that WWE's pulled off for the last couple of months. The New Day versus the Usos with SmackDown Tag Team titles. Nick, who you got here? This is a tough one.
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you because a lot of people hate when titles change back and forth in a quick amount of time, but this is a feud that, man, both of these teams have been great, and they've really, you know, their feud before the brand split was pretty damn good, I think, and this completely eclipses that, you know, what they've been doing on SmackDown. I love the fact that the New Day's, you know, winning tag titles still, even though they were the, you know, on Raw, a lot of people thought they were getting kind of boring towards the end. And then when they went to SmackDown, everyone's like, how's that going to, you know, translate? But, man, nothing's changed. They've been great. The Usos are at the peak of their WWE career right now. So, I mean, I could go either way, but, you know, I'll go the Usos, you know, just because I think, you know, I mean, now that I think about it, I don't know, because I think Kevin Owens is going to win. I don't know if they have two heel teams win both Hell in a Cell matches, so. I'm still going to go with the Usos just because, you know, they're on fire. And, you know, just two heels winning the Hell in a Cell matches, I'll go with it. You know, that's my prediction. You know, that'd be great if it happens for me personally, but I'll go Usos.
You do realize that if the Usos win, there has to be, like, almost another match, right? Because that's the rule.
Hey, man. I'm down with it. Maybe they can infiltrate Raw and wrestle at TLC.
Yeah, I can see that happening. TLC match. Like, look, we got this other match we had to add. It's for those blue titles.
Yeah. Well, the other brand.
Yeah, so it's so good. We gotta add it to our show too. Sean, what are you thinking with the Usos and the New Day?
Yeah, I think this is one of the toughest calls of the show because there's the question: are they going to extend this feud because it's been going on so long? But I think it's really good. They always have great matches every single time. That being said, they have done this match a million times, and that's one of the unfortunate aspects of the immediate rematch. It gives us things like this, which are good, but also it sets up situations where teams or wrestlers have to be beaten multiple times in a row too, in order to move on. And that's never good when you're losing a few times going into another feud. I'm sitting here wondering who else is in the SmackDown tag team division. Shelton and Gable, I guess. They're probably beating Hype Bros on Sunday, but I think it's going to be the Usos, and their versatility and their ability to adapt is, like, really, really special. I remember when they first came in, they weren't really over that much, and they adapted. They changed their entrance a little bit. They made themselves fun and just – like almost overnight, they were over again, or they were over for the first time. Then they got stale doing that, and then completely reinvented themselves. So I can't say enough good things about the Usos. They're fun to watch every week.
Yeah, they are. The current incarnation of the Usos is who they are to me. That it feels like that's them. So that's why it's working so well, because that's who they are, and it's fresh. It's different because you don't see kind of like, I don't know how you describe it, the gangster type type guys on TV and WWE, but it's working and they're doing it. It feels current because with their dressing, the way their mannerisms are, it feels current, it feels new, it feels hip, because I see guys like that walking down the street right now and they fit right in, and that's good though. That's, you want to be current. That's why I like Street Profits so much, because they feel current. They look and feel like guys that I see out here today. Like, I'm wearing a hat that Montez Ford wears pretty much on his own anyway. So, that solo cup, is people really walk around with solo cups, and you don't know what's in that solo cup. You don't necessarily want to drink out of that. But it's, you know, people have it. And the Usos, I'm going with New Day. I think since we got a heel winning the other one, got to have a babyface triumph in the Hell in a Cell with the Usos and the New Day. And it'll make a definitive end to this feud. It should end. Hell in a Cell. That's what it's built for. It's for it to end feud. So it has to end. Even though they don't really have a lot of depth elsewhere to go for New Day or for the Usos. But it has to end. Like, right? Like,
if I was Daniel Bryan, or if I were WWE, I'd have Daniel Bryan say, no matter who wins or loses tonight, this is over. We're moving past it. Type of thing.
Yeah. Gotta do something.
there's something that I would consider happening too. I haven't read the recent rumors yet, but Authors of Pain, if they're coming up, you know, maybe they come out, make their presence known after this match, you know.
As NXT Tag Team Champions? But they're still they're not the tag team champions anymore.
They do have a program coming up on NXT, though.
Yeah, so I don't know if they would do that, but it would be a hell of a way to introduce them. But
now, the way that they showed up at the NXT taping that hasn't aired is a way that could basically be like their farewell or the continuation of a feud. It could just be them showing up to wreck stuff and say, okay, we dominated you, we're going to move on now. Anything's possible, but we've seen that the Authors of Pain can work really, really well with great teams, and the Usos are a great team, New Day are a great team, and there are a couple of great teams on Raw, too.
Yeah, this is, but it's still going to be a depth issue regardless, because there's two divisions, and this is why when the brand extension first started, I was like, why? I don't think they should split the tag teams or the women, because it's just the depth isn't there. They could, I thought they could have one on each show. I don't know, but I just wasn't a fan of splitting the division, because you're going to have some serious depth issues, and there's a depth issue of depth on both shows, especially now that the Hardy Boys are on hiatus, because at least one of them is, because he's hurt, Jeff Hardy, and you got the Revival still mending, and you got Cologne still mending.
Yeah.
So they're hurting really bad right now. Maybe if all those teams are healthy, we wouldn't be saying this, but we are, because this is what happens when you have a kind of a shallow tag team division. Yeah. Next biggest match on the show, which really doesn't feel like a big match, but it's for the WWE Championship, so that by default, it's a big match. Jinder Mahal versus Shinsuke Nakamura. I did some research, guys, because, you know, I'm a researchy kind of guy. It was only 2 years ago. 2 years ago was the last time that the world title. It only happened actually three times that the world title has not been defended at a Hell in a Cell pay per view since the pay per view started in 2009. 2014, when Brock was the champ. 2015, Seth Rollins faced Kane in a typical, regular, normal match. And I can't remember the first one off the top. Well, this one will be the third time since 2009 that a world title, so that'd be WWE World or Universal Championship, has not been defended inside Hell in a Cell at Hell in a Cell. So, something to mull over there as we predict this match. Sean, you got the modern day Maharaja or the artiste, Shinsuke Nakamura?
So, there's a couple ways I see this going. Both surround this India tour in December.
Yep, that's a big factor in all this, right?
He's leaving as champion during that tour. Like, that's just how it's going to happen. My question is, does he go in as champion, or do they have him lose the title before then so they can recrown him in India and try to make a moment that makes headlines? That's what so much of this surrounds. This project has not been good. Like, I remember when it started, everybody was like, oh, at least they're trying something new. I don't want to say everybody, because there were some people with sense. But it's not worked out. It's been bad. The promos haven't been good. His in-ring work hasn't been good. He forgot how to do his finishing move at the end of the last match. He forgot how to do a Cobra Clutch. That's rough. That's rough. He's been wrestling for 15 years. But I think it's going Jinder. I think Jinder's winning.
Yeah, well, you go by the logic of the India tour, because that's definitely a factor. You have to consider that. I see what you're saying as far as him winning the title on the tour, which means he had to lose it at Hell in a Cell. But I think
He could lose it at Survivor Series. He could lose it on
because it's in December.
Because
it's in December. But to me, I think they want him on the tour from beginning to end as champion, because they probably want to do a lot of media appearances with him, with the title. Because that was why I thought they put the title on Naomi before WrestleMania, because like, she's from Orlando. It's like, oh, why would she win it before WrestleMania? Because she could do media with the title in Orlando. It's a better headline if she's the current champion than if she was a former champion. But maybe they could have Nakamura win it at Hell in a Cell and have Jinder Mahal win it, beat him on his first title defense. He can still go on the overseas tour as champ, because he said it's not until December, right?
Yeah, early December. It's between Survivor Series and the whatever the December pay-per-view is.
Yeah, it's not Roadblock anymore, right? So
I don't know what it is too.
It's December. I think they could have – I'm predicting Nakamura because I think they can still have Jinder Mahal. There's still plenty of time for Jinder Mahal to get the title back. He's going to get a rematch clause if he loses it at Hell in a Cell. So if they have a rematch at Survivor Series – I don't know if they – are they doing the Raw versus SmackDown thing again at Survivor Series? I hope not because it's pointless. So they can possibly – or like I said, on an episode of SmackDown or something like that, they could do the rematch and have him cheat to win again. So I'm going with Nakamura to win at Hell in a Cell.
Clash of the Champions.
December. Oh, that's the December?
There we go. Pay-per-view.
Nice job on the research and a Google, quick Google search there.
You know it. man, this is tough because my heart wants Nakamura to win because I'm kind of with Sean. I think this experiment with Jinder, like, it's just, yeah, they have the India tour coming up, but man, like, it doesn't feel good with Jinder as champion right now. Just, you know, everything just, I don't know, it seems to fall flat with me. And I don't know if it's because of the writing or his matches are underwhelming me. Maybe it's a combination, but I was all for letting it play out when he won it in May, see what they do. I figured SummerSlam was the time he'd drop it. And when that didn't happen, I was kind of like, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't pick against Jinder Mahal until he actually loses.
It's come to that now.
But him
bet against the champ.
Him beating Nakamura twice is just like, what? So maybe Nakamura wins via DQ. Maybe the title is a change hands, and then that's how they keep it going. But
would not be a fan of that at all if he won by DQ.
And neither would the crowd. The crowd would probably. and I wouldn't blame him one bit.
At this stage, after we've seen that type of thing so many times, like,
right. Yeah, come on, absolutely. Yeah. So I think that. I think Jinder ultimately walks out as champion. You know, I can see Nakamura winning by DQ or countout, but Jinder walks out as champion. I'll leave it at that.
like I said, I think Nakamura wins, and he could lose it again between now and December. I mean,
would that not make more people upset about that than him just flat out?
It might lose it. It might, but if he loses by some nefarious means, I mean, they could save him. They could still protect him in a certain way.
They could make a story out of it, but it's just, yeah. After people have been wanting him to win it for so long, ever since he got called up, and then now this, I'm not sure it bodes well.
Sometimes you can only fight against the Titanic with so much. You know what this is about. This ain't about just giving fans what they want. This is about trying to appease to a certain market that they're trying to really make inroads in. This is as much a business decision as it is a storyline, giving fans what they want decision. So, hey, I think, like I said, I think they can still give Nakamura a quick title run. Sometimes not everybody needs long-ass title runs either. I thought that when Booker T lost at WrestleMania to Triple H, I thought that he could have lost at the next pay-per-view.
Yeah.
8 month title reign. Just give him that win so he can have that moment and have that triumphant moment of, hey, I overcame this guy who's talking this junk about me, about guys like you don't win world titles, but he can lose it back the next month. And it doesn't hurt, it doesn't taint the moment he had at WrestleMania, so I think that could still happen with Nakamura. I think we spent way too much time on that match, by the way. It's just not that important. Let's kind of breeze through the rest of this card here, because much, but we got Natalya versus Charlotte Flair. I'm going Charlotte. Sean?
Yeah, I got Charlotte too. I think it's her time to be crowned, unless they try to stretch it out just a little bit longer to Survivor Series or something, because they do that sometimes.
Yes, they do.
But Charlotte's going to win this title from Natalya, I think. Otherwise, maybe Carmella slips in. And
yeah. Cashes in. I could see
that's
that
always
too.
A threat.
I could see the Charlotte winning and the Carmella cashing in. But Nick, who you got?
I want Charlotte to win, but I just have a feeling that Natalya will win somehow. Maybe like you said earlier, nefarious means. I love that phrase on this show. We've used it various times. And I don't think it's the only match between these two. I think they'll have a rematch where Charlotte will eventually win. and beat Natalya for the title, and maybe transition into a feud with either Carmella or any of the other women on the SmackDown roster. But I don't know. I just have this feeling that Charlotte doesn't win the title on Sunday.
Maybe, like I said, maybe she does, but Carmella kind of ruins the moment and cashes in and takes it from her. I could definitely see that. We have United States Championship match, AJ Styles versus Baron Corbin. Nick, who you got?
Show stealer, man. That's fun.
This is a show stealer? Stop it.
Yeah. I think I'll pick Styles because I just don't think Corbin is, there yet. I enjoyed him a lot before this recent run that he's had. Hopefully it's a good match, and hopefully it's a better outing for him than SummerSlam was. But, yeah, I think Styles comes out here as champ.
Sean?
I think they're going to go with Baron Corbin eventually. They like to make us think that a guy is so down and out that he can't win, then he wins. It's some of AJ Styles' matches since like WrestleMania have been a little underwhelming to me. So I think that he's going to see a challenge in Baron Corbin and step up. And I think their styles will play very, very well off of each other too, because
yes.
I'm sure that when AJ Styles gets hit with the End of Days, it's going to be a very creative one. I'm almost most excited to see that, but I think Baron Corbin wins.
I agree with you as far as their styles. I think Baron Corbin works really well with smaller guys. I mean, you look at – he had a match with AJ Styles. Like, I forget how long ago that was. Yeah, that Kalisto match, the chairs match, which just far exceeded expectations.
Really
had no
good.
Business being good, and it was really good. But I thought he worked well with Styles. I forget how long ago they was when they faced each other. I think he works well with Sami Zayn. Just guys smaller than him, they can create a lot of motion for him. And I think him and Styles are actually – have a really good match, but I don't know. I might go with Corbin. Why not? I mean, the guy can use something. We like that fire under his character, I should say. And it might work. I mean, I've always been a fan of Baron Corbin, so I don't know. I've always had a soft spot for him. I think he's got a lot of potential, but I know some people don't. A lot of people hate on him because he didn't work the indies and whatnot, and because he's a football player. A lot of people don't like him. It's really simple. It's not like some real in-depth reason. They hated him the first moment they saw him on NXT. They didn't even see him work a match yet, but I think they got that potential, and I think he'll win the U.S. title.
Wow.
Bobby Roode versus Dolph Ziggler. Bobby Roode.
Yeah.
Yep, Bobby Roode's winning that match.
Yeah. Randy Orton versus Rusev. This isn't the last match. We have the pre-show match as well, but Randy Orton versus Rusev.
I'll go Orton.
Sean?
Yeah, probably Orton. Yeah, it's just – and they found his sweet spot by having him just show up and RKO people and get the hell out of the way. But I get the feeling this will be like a 12-minute, 13-minute match that won't retain our interest very long. Then he'll hit the RKO, get a pop, and win.
It should be Rusev. I think he definitely could use the win. Strong heel on SmackDown besides Jinder Mahal, Kevin Owens. But it's going to be Randy Orton probably. So maybe Rusev win with some interference from Aiden English. I wouldn't be surprised by that. Maybe Aiden English will sing a song.
He's great.
Right. Maybe he'll sing a song and Randy Orton will be so distracted by his melodious voice that He gets hit with a kick, yeah. Super kick, and put an accolade.
He just
loses.
Aiden English just sing Randy Orton's theme song.
He should sing everybody's theme song.
He
should put lyrics to Rusev's theme song.
That would be great. That's a fantastic idea.
John Cena's theme song.
Oh man, just karaoke with Aiden English. That should be a segment every week.
Yeah, once they're done with the Fashion Files, we do karaoke with Aiden.
Well, they should never be done with the Fashion Files. That should go on forever.
True that.
And I'm still mad that they didn't. Yeah, and they better deliver. They didn't deliver on SmackDown. It's supposed to happen on SmackDown.
That is weird.
I don't know. It's weird. It's all weird. But hopefully they do something at Hell in a Cell. And the pre-show match, the kickoff match, you got Hype Bros versus Shelton Benjamin and Chad Gable.
Nice.
So who you got?
We know Shelton and Gable are winning this match.
Yeah. It might even be a squash match, you know?
Yeah.
Just to further that.
They got time to fill in that kickoff show. It was probably not going to be a squash, unless it's a 10-minute squash or something like that. But so that is Hell in a Cell, folks. 2017. This show will be in – where is this show?
Not really all the matches. Seems like there was more.
No, wow. That's it. They're gonna need some matches to fill that 3-hour block of pay-per-view. But
Fashion Files will be like
this show will emanate. Hopefully, I'm all for it. But this show will emanate from the brand new Little Caesars Arena in Detroit. So no more Joe Louis Arena, Little Caesars Arena. I haven't seen this arena yet, so that'd be interesting to see come Sunday night.
That is it for him. Really big.
I don't know. As long as the Giant isn't falling off this building like he did at the Cobo Hall at Halloween Havoc, yeah. I'm good. that was disgraceful. All right. So tomorrow is a historic day in wrestling history on the spell, because tomorrow marks 20 years since the very first Hell in a Cell match at Bad Blood Double D. With the bad and the blood, right? Was it 2 D's in both?
Just
bad? Okay. But Double D Bad and Blood, just 2 O's, not 2 D's. But 20 years ago, Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker set pretty much the benchmark for what a great Hell in a Cell match would be, and it's still probably the standard to this day as far as a great Hell in a Cell match. But that was 20 years ago tomorrow, and it also served as the debut of Kane. So a lot happened on October 5th, 1997. Nick, try to take people back to where you were in 97, and I don't know if you watched the match live, but what were your thoughts about that match, and what were you thinking about it as it happened at the time?
Oh, man. Dude, I had a feeling we were going to see Kane. I thought he was going to debut at Ground Zero. This is before I had the internet, but I was so enthralled in the storyline, man. This is when I told you, when did we have our favorite year in wrestling? Not that long, like a few months ago, our show, and 97 was my favorite year. I was following that all throughout the summer. I thought it was a great storyline, and I was just so pumped up for it. When it didn't happen at Ground Zero, I was a little bit like, eh. But Bad Blood, you know, Hell in a Cell, I was like, it just seems like the perfect time for Kane to show up. And the match completely kind of enthralled me. So I almost forgot about Kane up until when the lights went out. And I was like, oh, this is it. So it was all exciting for me. You know, it was at the time where I finally realized wrestling was scripted. So I wasn't, you know, upset by any of the outcomes at that point. And it was just, you know, I thought it was a little weird that, you know, that one tombstone killed The Undertaker for, you know, like 10 minutes. But
it was the only tombstone from Kane, though. You had to pick the guy up strong first night.
Yeah, he was like, you know, turning around looking for the hard camera, I think. You know, couldn't find it. And it's just, it's like, well, what the hell is he doing? But that's more of, you know, what I thought. And I was just like, man, this is badass. So, and the fact that how tall he was and all that, I thought he was, to me, he looked a lot bigger than The Undertaker. So I was like, damn, he's going to kill him. So I was like really into everything. Shawn Michaels winning wasn't really that much surprising to me, because I had anticipated Shawn versus Bret anyway at Survivor Series. The blood was like friggin' crazy. The fall from the top of the cell, he was hanging. And
Jerry Lawler going, incoming!
Yeah, man, I just remember, I seem to remember that match, like, step by step, you know, like, just everything about it. I might have watched it maybe 15 times after that, the next, like, week. So, definitely my favorite of all time. And really, for the subsequent Hell in a Cell matches, is almost not fair, because it's almost like that was the perfect one. Maybe it's because it's the first one we saw. And I don't know if that has anything to do with it. And it's just really hard for any of the Cell matches to compare to that one.
Well, it was a perfect storm. You had a great rivalry.
Yeah.
You had two great performers. It was they worked the match like it should have been. It's a blow off. It's just blood. There's brutality. I mean, it, and I don't know, like you said, I don't know how many others, if any others have really truly measured up since. But Sean, take us to where you were back in 97 and what were your thoughts about the very first Hell in a Cell 20 years ago tomorrow?
That's before I was getting pay-per-views and stuff. I would see it the next night on Raw or hear about it at right. school or something like that. Eventually see it in WWF Raw magazine or the WWF magazine, something of that sort. It's looking back, you see how much that was. They put all their eggs into that basket because the rest of that show was DOA versus Mariquas and Owen Hart versus Farouk, yeah. and it didn't even go 6 minutes. Godwin's in the headbanger.
Yeah, Steve Austin commentary for the IC title match, though.
Yes, that was the best part of it. A handicap match, yeah. and a minis match, and a 25-minute flag match.
Oh, yeah.
With the Patriot Del Wilkes.
Yeah.
With Del Wilkes yep. in it. So that's what sticks out to me is that they were so confident in this angle. That's all anybody talked about the next day. It's all that anybody talks about from that show today. So the fact that they were able to basically change the litter box there and hide that scent of a show with such a fantastic match and a memorable angle like that. Like you said, Hell in a Cell, that's the like first or second thing I think of. There's Mick Foley flying off a cage, and then there's Kane ripping the door off a cage. That's yeah. what I think of.
Also, I didn't watch the show live as well. I was only, 97? I was 8 years old? Yeah, I was 8 in 1997, so didn't watch the show live. Probably a good thing. It's the amount of blood that was on it. didn't want to traumatize an 8-year-old. Watching Shawn Michaels bleed throughout his face. But in hindsight, though, I have watched it, obviously, since then multiple times, and it was just what a great story they told over the course of that summer, from the SummerSlam match to the what was the event before Hell in a Cell?
Ground Zero.
Ground Zero, where they had to brawl all around the arena, and it was just nothing could contain these two. And they just genuinely, you just felt the hatred for each other that they had. Yeah. And then they put them in the Hell in a Cell match, and then they ended one feud, which they really totally didn't end because they still had a match at the Royal Rumble.
Right.
Unnecessarily, I thought. But they ended one feud and then sparked another right then and there, which is I'm always a fan of. I've always liked when it's clear when they have a plan and they can creatively end one thing and turn right around and begin another thing and get you instantly hooked in that second thing. So, yeah, it's just and the way the match came off and the way they worked and that fall from Shawn Michaels, he just went right through that damn table. Nothing was even moved off the table. The TVs and monitors fell right on top of him. And then everything, and since there was very little room at the ringside area, everything felt really claustrophobic and chaotic. And it was just like him falling and TVs and monitors and the announcers are right there and they're falling down. And it was just crazy. So yeah, but it was a great booking on that night. And, like I said, still probably the standard to this day as far as Hell in a Cell matches. I don't think that there have been other great ones, but I don't think that one really truly measured up to the rivalry, the story, and the execution of the match to the original. But we are going to talk about the other ones that have taken place over the last 20 years. I think, Sean, you said there have been 38, or this weekend will mark 38 Hell in a Cells to this date.
Yeah, ton of them. And it's weird to think they're like – I think in 2001, there weren't any. They skipped a while after every year seemed to have a memorable moment, for better or for worse. You had the Kane debut. You had Mick Foley flying off the cell. You had Big Boss Man getting hung. You had the Cactus Jack Triple H match. You had Rikishi later that year falling off. And then they kind of let it go away for a while. Then they brought it back, and it was much more subdued after that. They had to scale it back. I mean, maybe I'm missing something, but I can't remember anything from Triple H Jericho, Lesnar Undertaker, Triple H Nash, Triple H Michaels.
That first Lesnar Undertaker match actually was, I thought, was pretty good. I thought
It was good. They just didn't do anything like psychotic top or anything.
You know, Paul Heyman had a hell of a blade job in that match where he was bleeding everywhere, if I recall correctly. But Sean, if you want to start us off with some of the ones that you remember, I know you listed off a couple right there, but if you got a couple more that you want to mention, Some memorable
I'm
ones.
One of the few people who apparently really enjoyed the Charlotte Sasha match from last year. A lot of people hated the finish. Mm-hmm. I liked the match. I thought it was really, really good. Rollins has taken to these matches very well. I thought Undertaker and Lesnar tore the house down when they had their match in Los Angeles. I remember yes. Ryback and CM Punk for the wrong reasons in Hell in a Cell because of how terrible it was. I think back to Mark Henry in the midst of his big push, and while maybe not one of the greatest matches ever, I loved that Mark Henry push so much. I was so happy that he was getting that championship win over Randy Orton in Hell in a Cell. It showed that they were ready to get behind him. That they were behind mm-hmm. him over such a thing. Yeah, I mean they've experimented with them. They've went to the tag team route. They've went the multiple person route. Of course, I remember the old DX cage matches, Hell in a Cell matches they had with Legacy and Mr. McMahon, Shane McMahon, and Big Show. But they don't necessarily always live up to Hell in a Cell quality. Triple H, Undertaker is one that certainly did, but I'm always paying attention to them. I'll give it that much.
Yes. Nick, what about some of the ones that you remember over the years?
I got two right off the top of my head. Probably my second favorite Hell in a Cell match was Batista versus Triple H at Vengeance in 05, I believe it was. That whole Triple H-Batista feud I thought was awesome. They perfectly. It was almost, you know, like a mimic of Orton turning on, well, really Evolution turning on Orton, but the building of Batista and then the feud after WrestleMania with him, I thought the Hell in a Cell match was awesome. Triple H bled so much like he always does in those big matches. And then he had the sledgehammer, Batista picked him up for the Batista bomb. Sledgehammer, like I was legit like, man, he's going to like hit him and, you know, he's going to win. Like that type of drama, that was very, I don't know, I didn't expect it. You know, from Triple H and Batista, I thought I was one of those guys that's like, oh, Batista's just a, you know, big guy that can't wrestle type of thing.
Same way people think about Fire Baron Corbin today, just hating on big Dave.
Yeah, and, hey, I was one of those guys back then.
Who, by the way, is in Blade Runner 2049, which I've seen get a lot of positive reviews so far. So congrats to Big Dave being
good
another blockbuster. Who
would have thought, man? Good for him. Who would have thought in 2005, 2006 that he would be landing these giant roles? Good for it. That's so awesome.
And is good and seems like a genuinely good guy, too. From everything I've heard about Batista, he seems like just an all-around good guy. So
he's a very real dude. Like he's not going to sugarcoat or BS anything.
Right, and he worked for these roles, so kudos to Batista for that. But go ahead, Nick. I didn't mean to interrupt you about Batista.
No. I think Batista is one of the more underappreciated superstars of his time, especially by me. Looking back, I think he was perfect in almost every role he was in. Even when he came back in 2014 and the fans turned on him, he parlayed that into, you know, a small run with Evolution. I thought he was perfect in that role. So this particular Hell in a Cell with him and Triple H bleeding, Batista, I'm sure he was bleeding at some point in there, and just the ending. It really cemented Batista as the top star, I think, in the company at that point. There was a time where he was higher than John Cena, and it was around that time, too. So when John Cena came over to Raw, I think that's when and Batista went to SmackDown. That's when they kind of switched roles a little bit. But that's one of my favorite Hell in a Cell matches. And then I have another favorite one, but that doesn't really have to do with the in-ring action with Alberto Del Rio, John Cena, and CM Punk. I think it was 2011. It was the angle at the end of the match where The Miz and R-Truth came out and completely decimated everyone.
Oh, yeah.
And had everyone come out and Triple H going nuts. Jim Ross on commentary was phenomenal, just building that whole thing. I did not see that live. So when I read the reviews, it was like, man, it was like such a great angle. Let's see. I wound up watching the replay and I legit was like, wow. So I knew what was going to happen and I still was like, whoa, like, That angle had everything to do with my love of that match. And them getting arrested and then Triple H beating the piss out of both of them. Like, everything was... and then him getting taken to the back and then going off the air, just everything about that. I was just like, man, like this is actually pretty cool. Cause, and that for me, I was in a lull with WWE for about, I want to say 2009-ish to 2012-ish. Like everything they did, it almost seemed like I didn't like. So that might have something to do with my love for that angle and that match in particular.
Wow. Yeah, I forgot about that angle at the end of that particular Hell in a Cell. That was, I mean, they were really doing it just to build up Miz and R-Truth for The Rock and Cena, but it was a good way to do it.
Yeah.
And
and Jim Ross did a hell of a job selling it, too.
Oh, yeah. He's like, open the door! Open the door! Something like that. And yeah. Beating the hell out of everybody.
Who the hell do you think you are?
Miz had the white t-shirt on, didn't have nothing fancy on. It was pretty badass. I agree. So many Hell in a Cell matches, unfortunately. One I think that no one mentioned, I'm surprised no one mentioned this one, Edge versus Undertaker.
Yeah, they had some great matches.
I mean, that was a hell of a match. And I know we said they kind of tame over the years, but that one was kind of brutal, especially with the ending with the whole chokeslam through the ring. The Edge apparently wanted to do something way worse than that, and Vince was like, please, don't do that. But I think that's the first one where they had the super high. So, back in 08, Rollins and Ambrose from, what was that? That was Hell in a Cell, 2014. I thought that was a decent one, even though the ending was kind of trash. I mean, with the whole Bray Wyatt hologram thing. But I thought the match itself worked before that. Armageddon in the Cell on the surface felt very overbooked with six guys in the Hell in a Cell match, but everybody was over. And the best part to me was Vince McMahon coming down in the truck, in the bed of the truck with his cane. He's like, I'm going to tear the whole damn thing down. Bring it down. Bringing the whole damn thing down. So, I mean, WWE can basically do no wrong in 2000, and that's another indication that they could do no wrong because they had six guys in the Hell in a Cell. Everybody was over, and people were into it. I don't think anybody was complaining, oh, this is too much. No, people bought tickets. People paid for the pay-per-view, and it worked.
Rikishi sticks out like a sore thumb now, though, out of those six
he
guys.
He does.
Yeah.
He does. But
back then, he looked like he was going to be that guy or one of those guys.
And before he turned heel, he was over. Mm-hmm. I think people forget how over Rikishi was before they turned him, which is still, why did they do that? Because he was in the top three or four baby faces they had at that point. But that's a match that I thought was really good.
That Edge Undertaker match you brought up, that did kind of slip my mind. It says a lot with that match. They main evented that over JBL, CM Punk for the heavyweight championship. They headlined it over the WWE championship match, which was Triple H and Kali. They headlined it over John Cena versus Batista.
Yeah.
So that they had a lot of confidence in that match, and it paid off because that was one of the best best Hell in a Cell matches of all time.
Yeah. That like you said, that's a big, especially that Cena Batista one, because that was like the Cena Roman Reigns match was at No Mercy. It's like, oh, the two biggest stars of this generation clashing for the first time and got the main bill over there. Because it's a Hell in a Cell. Why wouldn't you make it the main bill?
And you even had Cena and Orton in a Hell in a Cell, which kind of, I don't really remember that much at all,
A lot of the Cena Orton matches are forgettable. what about Taker versus Triple H at WrestleMania? 28?
Yeah,
that was a great match.
Yeah.
Shawn Michaels.
Had me sold into thinking Triple H was going to beat him a couple times. See, a lot of people, like, through then, I was like, they don't have a chance. But then, there's the Triple H ego. Like, will he make himself be that guy? You always – that's a thing that you got to wonder. That's why Triple H matches always hold that little bit of intrigue for me. Because where the result sometimes seems like it's going to be obvious, you never know when that just might come through and – he decides to book himself to go over.
Yeah.
And like I said, no matter who he goes up against, even if he went up against Kevin Owens, which people have been speculating, he might face Kevin Owens after the Shane thing, will he go over Kevin Owens? Because he went over CM Punk when he was red hot, and it made no sense. But
one of the worst booking decisions ever.
Yeah, it could happen to him. It could happen to anybody. But another...
I mean, the one from 2000 with Triple H and Cactus Jack was pretty
fun. I was just going to mention that. That was really good. The story was really good, and they just kind of peed all over that with WrestleMania that year.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Taker versus Mankind. I mean, the one, the most infamous probably Hell in a Cell match from 98.
Yep. Man.
So
that night,
a bunch of them. That was nuts.
Jeez.
That was really nuts.
And then just, I think Mankind showed up on Raw the next night or something, and I'm just like, what the hell? And so this is like right after
he showed up later that night.
That
night in the first blood match.
This is like right when
what was his name?
I believe my summer vacation started from school, so you know I'm allowed to stay up late and watch these pay per views and tape them or whatever. So man, I rewound this like 15 times after that. Just like as a, did I really just see that? And I was also shocked that Austin lost the title to Kane, so that was part of it too. But that whole pay per view.
Yeah.
But this was just like ridiculous. Seeing him legitimately throw him off the cell and land perfectly, you know, was just like, whoa.
Yeah, where I mentioned earlier how the first Hell in a Cell match kind of masked an uneventful show otherwise. This, like that one, had a lot of stuff going on. Like you said, Kane won the championship in the main event. This wasn't the main event. There was the King of the Ring finals that night, and there was some stuff going on that night besides just this match.
Yeah, there was a whole lot going on back in 98.
They even brought the cell out during the main event, too.
They did. What the hell? Didn't they have it out the week before on Raw, too?
Yeah.
I think the last show going into King of the Ring?
Yeah. Like 2 weeks before on a random Raw, and then the Raw that was in Philly that I was at.
Yeah, then they had a Hell in a Cell match on Raw. It was a lot going on back in those days. Attitude Era, not always as good as people romanticize it to be. There was also some bad Hell in a Cell matches, guys, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah. Man.
I'm thinking the number the of bad outweighs the good.
No, I wouldn't say that, but the one that I would point to as probably the worst, Undertaker versus Big Boss Man. Guys, that was horrifically bad.
It was bad.
And it happened in Philly, which made it even worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. For a number of reasons. Bad match, bad booking, bad decisions, altogether just not good.
Yeah. Just random hell, a few that didn't deserve to be in a Hell in a Cell. It had no business. It was only 9 minutes. Something like that. And then, of course, you got the post-match stuff, which was, I mean, everybody knows it's bad. How about, did you enjoy DX versus the McMahons? Because I really didn't.
That was more entertaining than anything.
Yes.
I mean, entertaining in the sense that it wasn't really meant for me to take it seriously, I guess I could say. Like, the fact that it was in a Hell in a Cell was kind of a joke to me. So,
if it's in a Hell in a Cell, we got to take it serious, right?
Yeah. Not that one.
Yeah, that was really... That was really... Jokey. A little too jokey for me.
Sticking somebody's face in somebody's ass in a Hell in a Cell match. Not necessarily the way you want to go.
I watched Sharkboy tease biting a dude's ass for like 20 minutes in the main event of an indie show once. Like you could tell he wasn't trying to add one to his bump card on that night.
That sounds actually kind of fun.
really?
DX versus Legacy. That's probably... I barely remember that match.
I barely remember that either, which speaks volumes.
Yeah. I mean, I'll probably watch and go back and probably like it, but barely remember that match.
Man, that was that three Hell in a Cell matches that night. Maybe that's why. Yeah, Undertaker and Orton and Cena. All inside.
That was the first Hell in a Cell. The first Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, right?
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah, once Hell in a Cell started, it kind of went downhill because, like I said, there's so many of them. Like the Del Rio Cena Punk thing, even though the post match was cool, but the match itself, I don't remember at all. CM Punk versus Ryback.
It's hard to find new stuff to do. It's hard to find innovative things to really stand out in these matches without going too far and risking your life.
But I still think that if an angle works, if you have two people that are over and you have a good story going in, it could stick out because I do remember Rollins versus Ambrose. and they did some cool things, but the story meant something. I think we'll walk away remembering who we have Sunday night. I think, yeah, I remember Lesnar versus Undertaker. That was a really good one. But when you have a lackluster story like Reigns versus Wyatt, and the match didn't really deliver on any level that would make it memorable, Reigns versus Rusev, the only part I remember is Rusev getting Reigns in the accolade with a chain and not somehow winning that match.
Right.
And of course you got Undertaker versus Shane McMahon, which was like, yuck. Like, I hated it going in. I hated it coming out. It was all bad.
It was a one-spot match.
Everything pretty surrounding much. The Randy Orton, Daniel Bryan Hell in a Cell match kind of pissed me off.
Such a missed opportunity with that match.
Yeah. Shawn Michaels is special referee, and literally they didn't do anything with it. It looked like they were going to.
He picked Daniel Bryan, right? That's the one where he kicked Daniel Bryan in the face?
And then nothing happened after that.
Yeah, people was like, oh, maybe this is a Daniel Bryan, Shawn Michaels WrestleMania match incoming.
Yeah, I didn't think the match was good to begin with, but then you at that time, you add on the fact that, like, Daniel Bryan was the hottest act in the company, and they just kind of pushed him to the side, and then they wound up doing, like, the Wyatt family versus Bryan and Punk, you know, just kind of, like, out of nowhere. It's like, what the hell? All that was lumped in together.
Yeah. So, any other thoughts on Hell in a Cell before we wrap up here, guys?
It's an innovative match 20 years ago that people still somehow try to find a way to make innovative today. I feel like if they want to make it stand out, they may have to do some overhauls in the future, kind of like what they did with Elimination Chamber. I thought this year's Elimination Chamber was revolutionized by some of the changes that they made and really helped it out. They've tried to make those changes with Hell in a Cell to a degree, but I think, you know, everybody looks forward to it going outside the cage, so there's going to have to be something. Like, maybe this Falls Count Anywhere aspect will be that. Maybe that will give this match the crutch it needs, but I have no doubts that Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon will probably have a good one, and Usos and Kofi are probably going to tear the house down.
Yeah,
I understand why WWE doesn't want a lot of matches to highlight blood, but man, this is a match that almost you gotta have blood, and this is the end feud, you know, like the end of a feud that you pull out all the stops, you try to pound your adversary as much as you can, rake his face across the cage, make him bleed, stuff like that. We don't see that. I understand why, but it takes a lot away from the match that we've come to know, especially 20 years ago with the first one, and even the subsequent ones. So, you know, it's, that kind of takes the specialness away from that match for me, because, you know, they're trying to be careful in there, and it's an environment that we were conditioned to believe that you're not careful in. So in terms of that, you know, it's just kind of like, yeah, I'm hoping these matches are good on Sunday.
I think they will be. I think, I'm definitely looking forward to them. I'm hoping they're good too, because I think the stories fit Hell in a Cell. They're worthy of being in there. I think that's one of the most important things, not just what happens in the match, what happens leading in to the match. Cause I think that's what made Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker so good, because their issues leading in, it makes everything more meaningful that happens inside the cell, because these two guys, you can feel the hatred between the two sides, whether it's two teams or two people, two women, as in the case of Sasha Banks and Charlotte. Like I said, innovative match. It's probably the most marquee, you know, gimmick match that you can have nowadays. I mean, it's top the steel cage. It's made steel cage a TV match essentially nowadays, where you don't, There's no, yay, I still cage, where that used to be the case. Hell in a Cell trumped that by a lot, especially with all the things that people have done with the Hell in a Cell over the years. But WWE's kind of hurt it with all the different, with the pay-per-view itself and having multiple on a show. I think Sunday will work, but there have been multiple times in the past where it didn't work, where you had two or three matches that didn't belong in Hell in a Cell. So I wish they kind of got rid of Hell in a Cell as a pay-per-view and only broke it out when it was warranted. Because the only reason why we're seeing it now is because it's October and the calendar says, oh, it's time to do Hell in a Cell. And I think that hurts it. And there's no reason why in 20 years there's been 38 or there will be 38 of them. We're talking about almost 40. It's almost an average of two per year since 1997. And that number has jumped up over the years since 2009 dramatically. So great. There's a lot of fond memories from Hell in a Cell, but WWE, you got to be careful with how you book this because it can lose its luster. And I agree with you, Sean, about Elimination Chamber. I think what they dumped to it was, I thought that was really good. I know some people are like, oh, why they put mats on the floor? So guys don't break their damn backs when they land on it. Like, that's like, so important.
Like, yeah, like, that was the biggest complaint I've gotten out of anybody I've spoken to that's wrestled in that match was the grates were pointless. They didn't sell the amount of damage that they did. And I'm like, everybody knows right. They're working. This allows for cooler spots outside the ring. It's helping the guys. The new chambers help out a lot. The new cameras help out a lot. They did a lot of positive with that match, I thought.
Yes. People are like, oh, it's a dangerous match. It should be dangerous. Yeah, not really. The whole point of wrestling is to not actually get hurt. But
the art of it is to make it not hurt.
Not right. Really make it look like it hurts, and but not.
All you need to do in the Hell in a Cell is just wait, like cut yourself open. You know, that's all you need to do to make it. To me, it's almost feel like a war game. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you don't need to go flip in and fly it everywhere. That's all you need to do.
It doesn't take a whole lot, even though I'm not, you know,
blading. By the way, I think Kevin Owens bleeds Sunday.
It would be poetic justice.
Yeah.
If Shane busted him.
Maybe that's a prop bet.
Yeah, maybe they agreed to do it hard way. Because, you know, blading's not allowed, so they try to get him hard way. Well, that's it. It's been a really good show, guys. I really enjoyed all this Hell in a Cell talk, walking down memory lane, so to speak, with Hell in a Cell. Sean, thanks for joining us once again. If you want to plug away with Fightful and whatever else you got going on, please do.
Sure. Fightful.com, guys. Check it out. We are on cross-platform, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Fightful Online. We have Fightful.com for all your wrestling, boxing, MMA news, photos, videos, podcasts, interviews. We break news there all the time. We've got a very high accuracy percentage. I don't think we've had any of our exclusives prove to be false. Outside of that time that Matt Riddle thought that he was going to wrestle Jeff Cobb on Flow Slam, then the guy got fired that booked it. So, I mean, there's that.
So you're not Billy Batty, who's counting how many stories you got right?
Knew that was coming. Knew it.
Fightful's got a 99.9% batting average.
Yeah, that's a hell of a batting average. That's what we said, wasn't it? Like,
yeah.
And then you'd go back and look, like, and you'd be like, no, maybe not so much. But yeah, we have forums that cover pro wrestling, boxing, MMA, video games, TV, entertainment, sports, anything you all want. I love interacting with our viewers and our readers. Live podcasts after Raw, SmackDown, every WWE, UFC pay-per-view, and we have a couple of flagship shows in the middle of the week. If you all ever wanted to hear a podcast from a guy who was a millionaire and decided to start a wrestling website, and then the guy who he picked to run a wrestling website, the Wednesday show's for you.
There you go. Nice. Listing your boy.
Yeah.
On YouTube. Fightful.
It's sometimes Nick, a good time.
Sometimes. 60% of the time, it works every time.
Yes.
Nick, plug away, please.
You can follow us at Shooters Radio on Twitter. Follow me at Nick Picone, NickPiccone. Check out PhillyInfluencer.com. We've got a lot of great Eagles content going on right now. Flyers open the season tonight. We'll have some stuff on that. And the Sixers preseason starts tonight, so we also got some stuff on that.
Yeah.
And
a lot going on.
Yeah. Check out PhillyVoice.com. I'll have my Hell in a Cell recap posted on Monday morning. And my Medium page, medium.com/@PiconeNick. Probably write something on expand a little bit on Ryan Satin's report on Bray Wyatt being Sister Abigail. Might be a great thing. So look out for that within the next 2 days. I'll have that up. And also follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/TheStraightShooters.
All right. Well, I'm at Vaughn M. Johnson because Vaughn Johnson still has my handle. Still hunting him down to this day. You can check out my work on the Square Circle blog on philly.com. I got Raw, SmackDown recaps. I got a recent interview with Jim Ross, whose book dropped yesterday on Amazon and various other places. His autobiography, Slobberknocker, My Life in Wrestling. So you check that out wherever your books are sold. Like I said, that just dropped yesterday. This is the second time I talked to him in about a month about the book. But Jim Ross is always great to talk to. He's very very gracious with his time. I never turn down an opportunity to talk to Mr. Ross because he's said a wealth of knowledge and very open. He loves talking about football, which is up my alley because he loves talking about, hey, how's Lane Johnson doing up there with the Eagles? He asked me that every time I talk to him. We had DeMarco Murray. How's DeMarco Murray and Sam Bradford doing up there? So check that out.
Remember when we had him on to talk about Sam Bradford and Eagles traded him like a few weeks later?
Yeah, that was fun. And then he was like, what the hell is wrong, Lane Johnson getting suspended and stuff like that? He's mad as hell about that.
He was.
So check that out. Check out my story on Gabby Ortiz, who's that was from last week or maybe 2 weeks ago now. Damn. The independent wrestler who works in Philadelphia City Hall. Still a big story that I'm still going to promote because it's a big story. And it's a great story. I thought so. Even though I wrote it, I'm a little biased, but still. Got a lot of compliments on it. So check that out. And, yeah, you mentioned the Facebook and the Twitter and all that stuff, right, Nick?
Yeah.
You handled that? Yeah. As always, check us out on Wildfire Radio, YouTube, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio. Carrier Pigeon, we got that popping up, too, sometime soon.
Yeah. In the works.
Tin Cans on a String, got that working, too. You can listen to us there. So yeah, I think that's all my plugs. I'm like
in Tiger Electronics or something like that. Like remember those things?
Yeah, something. We can get it on a Talk Boy or something like that.
That's what I'm talking. I had one of those.
I always wanted one. I thought it was the most badass thing to have.
But looking back, they were so overrated.
Oh, of course. But when you saw them in Home Alone 2, you was like, oh,
that's my Halloween costume this year. A little exclusive for you all. Me and my wife are going as the Wet Bandits.
Nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
You steal people's scars as the Wet Bandits. That was the Sticky Bandits.
Well, I might go with the Sticky Bandits because I think wrapping my hand in scotch tape might be a little more of a visual. Yeah.
Hopefully that doesn't cut off the circulation to your hand.
It doesn't matter. I'm going to get all kinds of change.
The Sticky Bandits. He said, we're the Wet Bandits. W-E-T. All right.
Listen for you guys. We'll have the Wet Bandits on the show next week.
Wet Bandits and Sticky Bandits. Home Alone's a great – that's a classic. Such a classic right there. All right, well –
watch them every year.
You have to. You absolutely have to. I even got my daughter to watch it. She's like, what is this? This ain't a cartoon.
It's great.
It's better.
And she liked it. Better than Teen Titans. But but that's it, guys. Thanks for watching episode 115. We really appreciate you guys watching us live and listening to us on iTunes and all those other platforms I mentioned a couple minutes ago. So for Sean Ross Sapp and Nick Pacone, I'm Vaughn Johnson. Catch us again next week for episode 116.
Peace.
You've been listening to the Straight Shooters on Wildfire Radio. For advertising opportunities, contact Nick Pacone via email at PaconeNick@gmail.com or call 856-625-1190.